Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuc.
My name is Susan Akins, and I'm at Cavick River Camp, which is located at 69.4 North by 146.54 West on the Alaskan North Slope. A lot of women have a lot of shoes that they collect. Bullets. Beverages, bullets, beer, blood, and guts.
The National Geographic Channel's documentary series, Life Below Zero, follows seven people as they struggle to survive the treacherous and remote lives they've made for themselves near or above the Arctic Circle in the Alaskan bush. Some of them are lone wolves, others have families beside them. They fish, forage, and freeze in a world that doesn't care if they get through the winter or not. Sue Akins lives by herself at Kavik River Camp, which is located a few miles from the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, a place so remote, the address is given in latitude and longitude. The ground is frozen year-round, so there's no way to dig a well, yet Sue has internet and telephone service, even if it does often drop in extreme weather. Sue Akins, welcome to the Roundtable.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
It's my pleasure, absolutely. How did you first move to Alaska about 30 years ago? What brought you there in the first place?
Well, my mom was, I was born in Chicago, and my mom wanted to leave my dad. Divorce back then in the 60s was still not real popular, so we got tossed one paper bag and told, pack one sack, you're moving to Alaska, and that's just what we did the next day.
And how did you come to your position at Kavik River Camp, and then, if you don't mind, tell the listeners what you do there, what the camp is for?
Over my life, you know, even when I was five, And you get asked in school, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? I've always answered, I want to be a lighthouse keeper. I've craved extreme isolation. That's where my happy place is. The former owner of the camp was a good friend, and I had done some babysitting for their kid with his first wife years ago. And so he had contacted me. They needed somebody to watch the camp and be a manager. At that time, I was married to somebody, and so we came up here with, I had my sled dogs, he had his, and but in that first year, I found out my grandson had cancer, so I left to be with him, and while I was gone, that spouse took everything that wasn't nailed down, including the bank accounts, and split with an 18, 19-year-old. When I came back, I had to make a decision. Do you cry about it, or do you just try to figure it out on your own? So I called my friend, the owner, and said, look, you know, the only thing I know about diesel mechanics is how to bake bread, but I can learn. And that's what I've done. And now, you know, here we are. I've been here 12 years now, and I've purchased the camp. And Kavik River Camp, it's sort of like a really remote and twisted bed and breakfast. People can come here for any reason that they want to be in the high Arctic. During the month of August and part of September, I do get a lot of hunters. But the rest of the time, it's ologists that want to, whatever scientific work they're doing that involves the Arctic, they can stay here. Bird watchers, rafters, hikers, and it's a jumping off place for people to get into the refuge, the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. What I do is provide the rooms and the food and the showers. And, you know, I don't guide people for hunting. The only people I babysit are my grandkids. But, whatever else you want out here, that's what I help you achieve.
Are you still every day learning something new about surviving in the Arctic yourself?
Absolutely. You know, I say I'm kind of a Gomer Pyle for being out here doing what I do. There's no certification on skills. It's just things that I've learned, things that I apply, and things that you glean from other people. And sometimes I have great ideas, and other times it's a real learning experience. So, every single season is different. You know, I'm a challenge-driven personality. I thrive. The harder the challenge, the more I thrive. And this is an area that never stops challenging you. So it fits really well for me.
You had, and I'm sure this is something every person you talk to asks you about, you were attacked by a bear a number of years ago. Do you mind telling us about that terrifying experience?
I can glean over it.
Okay.
And, you know, it's not my favorite subject to go in depth about. You know, once you bring that up into the forefront of your brain, then it's there, and I tend to have nightmares about it, and that's not comfortable.
No.
I live in a tent out here, There's not a lot of difficulty in the bears or any of the apex predators coming through the wall. But you go back years ago, there was a juvenile male bear, and he was doing a push for my territory. He wasn't alpha and old enough to be, the main alpha in the group. The chicks didn't dig him, so he was looking for territory. And I was in the, this is, and it happened at a time of year where I no longer had guests, and I was freezing up, but I wanted to get one more load of water, liquid water, out of the river. When I went down to do that, I looked around for the bear, didn't see him anywhere, set the rifle down, put my pump into the river, but the fog had come down to the ground, and I didn't have a lot of visibility. He was actually hiding in the cut bank and snatched me up and rolled me around in the tundra. And without getting into detail, he stopped charging and went back down into the riverbank. I did not remember I had a gun by the river. I came into the dining hall here and couldn't walk well. He tore the hips out of the socket, compromised the spine. But bears are, they can have a lot of bacteria in their claws and teeth. So I cleaned up and sewed my head and arm together and put the gun belt on my hips real tight to lock them into place and went out and found him. And then, but then the hips gave out, the spine didn't work, and I laid here 10 days till somebody found me, a pilot found me, and flew me into Fairbanks and then down to the lower 48 for surgery.
After going through something that traumatizing, why do you think you stay?
The fact that I like the style of life didn't change simply because, for me to do this lifestyle, the bears live here. They've lived here for centuries and thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
I am entering their world, not the other way around. I still like the lifestyle. At that particular time, I really didn't know coming back how I would react to the next time a bear charged, and there would be a next time. I live with 83 grizzlies within 10 miles of camp, and those are just the ones they collar. So it's going to happen. I've already done a lot of the work for them. I've been injured. I busted my leg in three places the other year, worked on it for a year before I decided to have surgery. So I already walk with a little bit of a wiggle, and I've already culled myself from the herd. So those are two of the main things a predator wants. But without knowing how I'd react, all I could do is, if I hesitated at all, then my time here is done. I'm a liability. But when it came down to it, the bear charged, and I just dropped into automatic protect myself mode and dealt with it. So it gave me another lease on, okay, I'm still badass. I can still handle this for a while, and that's what I do.
How were you approached to participate in the National Geographic show Life Below Zero?
The creator of the show, one of the creators is Tommy, and he approached me. He had seen me and worked with me a little bit on, I did cameos on a show called Flying Wild Alaska, and then Sarah Palin's Alaska. And with the idea of the show, it's a non-scripted reality show about people who live kind of extreme remote lifestyles up
mm-hmm.
here. He thought I'd be a good fit, and... the thing I like about the show, one of the things I respect highly, is that it's not a scripted show. It's not where they turn around and say, hey, I think it'd look great if you fell through the ice in the sea. They don't create drama. They're just here to capture what actually happens. And so for me, the benefit, I have grandchildren. From here on out, their grandchildren even can put that in. If they ever wonder who the wild grandma in the bunch was, they can put that show in and go, oh my gosh, that's who she was. Sweet.
Was it tricky to adapt to having a camera follow you around?
I am a fan of my isolation. And however, there are times when the crew is here and I'm not as isolated as I am used to. So... they're all great people, though. I do enjoy people. I just don't want them here all the time. And but meeting some of these people and what they've had the chance to do, people come here and they want, tell me the bear story.
Right.
And I look at them and I'm like, tell me about the buses again and the traffic. it's things that people find every day for themselves down there are terrifying to me. One of the silly things this year is I actually had to look at my driver's license, and I have to get a new one this year. But in the last 10 years, I've only driven three times.
Because the nearest road is how many miles away? 80 miles away?
Uh-huh. It's 80 miles away. Now, every 2 to 3 years, I try to take a break and go physically see the grandkids or my kids. And but, you know, I don't necessarily drive. And when I do, I have to have a sidekick, because when I go out here, if I'm on the four-wheeler, I'm always checking out my horizon and not necessarily in front of me. So I have to have a sidekick to go, whoa, put on the brakes, Mom. You know, that's a stop sign. That means we got to stop, you know.
Do you watch the completed episodes of the show?
I have not seen all of them, but I have seen some of them. You know, and it's fascinating. There are several of us that the show follows, and even as far away as some of them are from me, it's fascinating to watch what they've chosen and how they deal with their own situations, you know. So, and as remote people, I mean, some of my closest neighbors emotionally are 1,000 miles away, but if I run into trouble, by golly, I know they're going to have my back.
What would happen if something dangerous was happening to you with the crew there? Would they just document it, or would they help? Or would it depend on what was happening?
You know, I don't know how to answer that one. I mean, I would assume that, if I'm getting my arm, well, there is, on the opening episode, there is a dangerous situation that I am in.
Mm-hmm.
Previously, I had told the crew, hey, if I'm getting chewed on, don't be the hero, man. You got wives, families, and kids, you know. Deal with your own bad self. You know, I've already resigned that I may have a real unusual ending and end up bear poop someday, but that doesn't follow that it's acceptable for them to do that.
Sue, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me today. It is a incredible television program. It's amazing that you let them in to show city folk like me what kind of life you're living up there. And thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I don't take the taking of life lightly. I absolutely respect every single thing about this guy. And I accepted a long time ago that something like this, I might be the one laying there, not him. Thank you, Bear. Your spirit will not go to waste. You'll bring warmth, nutrition. I'm grateful for it, but for perspective, this is definitely not the end of the war. This is one skirmish in the battle on the Arctic. It's not over.
Season 2 of Life Below Zero premieres tomorrow night at 9 p.m. on the National Geographic Channel. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.